Here we go. Welcome to the Animation Pimcast. I'm live from the Cinémathèque Québécoise in Montreal, Quebec, part of the Sommet du Cinéma d'Animation. You'll hear this months from now, so it'll be warm and sunny, and you won't know what the hell I'm talking about, but the weather is cold today. With me guesting today is the Latvian-American, American-Latvian. What do you prefer? Yeah. You don't care? You're not going to speak until I introduce you, is that right?
That's right. I give you.
Why are you speaking?
Because you asked me.
I'm sure everybody recognizes your voice by now. With me now is Signe Baumann. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So, can you tell me about knots?
Knots.
Knots.
They're like knots are opposite of yes and not.
No, knots that become like tangled.
Well,
because you were telling me that women. You were watching me try to untangle the mic, and
it's a very generalized statement to say that women are better at untying knots and men are better at cutting them. But that's looking at you trying to untangle the knots. I just thought if you gave me the task, I probably would be more effective about it.
How would that apply to a relationship knots?
Oh, I don't know.
Do you think it's an equal?
No, I think women are very good at
creating knots?
Yes. Right. That's right. That's why they get men under the knot.
Mm. But I don't know if men are good at untangling. Well, I guess they just give up and walk away from the knot. Or
yeah, or cut it.
Or they just make it worse.
No, they just cut it.
They just cut it?
Snip it.
Hmm. Okay. So you just made a feature film.
Okay. Yes.
You want to talk about it?
No, you invited me. You talk about it.
So we have maybe some conflict about the film. I'm not sure. Well, let's talk about the film first and the background to the film, how the whole idea
Well,
evolved.
I think, you know what? You're right. We should get the elephant in the room out of the way first before we move forward.
You think so, before we get to the roots of the film?
Yeah, I think so. It's okay. Because, like, I guess because there is this unsaid things, and I feel
the
that...
The black dog in the room.
The black dog. No, it's an elephant. It's a black elephant in the room. And I would like to just say how I feel, then I would like to hear what you feel about it, and then just get it out of the way and feel warm and fuzzy and move forward.
Okay.
All right?
None of this is edited, so you know.
I know.
Everything we
I
say
know.
Is going.
That's exactly
so, the way it should be.
That's what you told me, and I don't expect you to edit it. But I submitted the film to Ottawa, and the film received a lot of rejection. So by that time, and so I was not expecting you to like the film, right? Because it's not really your kind of film for many reasons, on many levels, right? It's not your kind of film. But I thought since the film was about depression, and since you know me, and I thought we were, you know, like friends, the way how friends are on animation, in animation community. Like, you know, I care for you. I care for your personal troubles, or we exchange some personal things. And somehow I thought that you would, may not accept it, you may reject it, but you would give it a personal consideration to these 88 minutes. You would look at it and you say, I see what she's trying to do. It's not my cup of tea. Reject, right? So, and I kind of thought that imaginary world, right? Because we have the personal relationship or personal attitudes that I thought, you know, there would be some kind of personal note from you saying, yeah, you know, it didn't work or something along those lines. It didn't work for me, but I see what you're trying to do. And then I received this cold rejection letter, formal. And I don't care for the short that was rejected, the Tarzan, because, you know, I see why, right? But then when you reject in a formal letter a cold letter, a rejection letter. It's just an impulse. It was an impulse. On the instant when I received it, I clicked reply and I said, do you really hate it so much? Something along those lines. And before I could even know, you are writing back to me in a very like snidey remark saying, you know, something about these lines, I can pull up my computer and tell you exactly what you said, but like, you know, what did you expect? You know, your film was unwatchable. I couldn't watch it. And which meant that you didn't get over the hump of the first 10 minutes and that you cut it off before you could even see. But what really hurt me was that because of our, you know, kind of personal investment in each other, that you wouldn't give my film more than 10 minutes. And that kind of was...
It was 20 for the record.
Okay, well, 20. But, you know, still you barely got over the hump. And I was like, okay, it's fair. I see the film is unwatchable. And you were not the first one to say it. It's four people who I very well respect who said the film is unwatchable. And I see that. I don't disagree with that. It's unwatchable. But I somehow thought that I am invested in you as a friend, and I was thinking that at least you would watch the film before you say it's unwatchable. So that is my point of view, and so that would like to hear what you, what is your kind of side of that story?
Well, I wish I could go back to my memory of that period. Because generally you're right. I would actually try to send something personal. You know, for example, Theodore's film this year, we didn't accept. That's what I should correct. It is an I. And I don't know how many times I have to get that across to people, that I am not the sole judge and jury of the competition screenings. There were two other people as well. Three other people in some cases. I don't know why I hadn't mm-hmm. gotten to the point where I was going to write you, or because I know I was traveling as well. So I don't know.
No, the thing why we animators think it's I and not we, because there's always this, the way how you work or operate, it's on a personal level. It's like, it's either, you know, it's your personal favorite or your personal unfavorite, right? It's like you say I when you say, like you say, like Bill Plimpton says, asks you, why did you reject my film? And you say, because I hated it. And it's like we see that I more than we see we.
In Bill's case, I wouldn't say I don't watch his entries, but I give them to the other people, you know, our programming team to look at, because so that it will avoid people saying, oh, he just doesn't like Plimpton. It's like, well, no, nobody else in this vicinity cares
well,
for it as
you
much
could, maybe
as
you
well.
Could you know, explain more how your process works.
I do explain that, and it is out there, okay. But people choose not to read it or see it or understand it, and I'm an easy target because I put myself out there.
Yep.
So it's the way it is, but I can't control. But I mean, anyway, to go back to your film, yeah, it could have been a case where I just hadn't gotten around to it, because we were releasing, this was the first year we released stuff in by category. So we didn't announce the competition all at once. It was week by week. So I was probably still watching the other entries. And then, yeah, whenever you wrote me, I remember it, you just caught me on a day where I just said whatever was on my mind uncensored. Which is usually the way we speak anyway. There was a case I just couldn't... I felt angry. And I wanted to show the film, and I wanted to support you. And, of course, the subject matter is something I have some knowledge about. And I couldn't get through it, the talk and the... I mean, if it was about being bipolar and you were capturing the manic side, that was pretty...
So you're not manic, ever?
Pretty good. No, never. No, there was a period where I thought I was bipolar.
Right.
And, you know, even my shrink later said, no, that was totally misdiagnosed.
Okay.
I don't have a manic.
So you couldn't relate to the manic voiceover?
Well, no, I know some, you know, I have a couple of friends who are, I've seen them in manic states, and it's a bit overwhelming. I couldn't get past the film, and the selection process there's only so much time you have. And I decided the best thing is to pass it over again to colleagues, let them have their say, and it was kind of a split decision. And it wasn't an easy decision. And maybe sometimes I sound so flippant, like it's just, this was just shit, and it's not like that. It was not an easy decision.
But to me, it seemed like you dismissed it in a flick of a hand. Like your email made it sound that way. And it's kind of...
No, we had a lot of discussion.
Okay.
Yeah. You just caught me on a bad...
Okay.
A bad email. But, you know, in Quebec, I tried to watch the film again. I left again. I don't know.
So you haven't seen it?
Not all the way through.
So what are you going to talk about?
Life.
Okay.
The film, why you made the film. That sort of stuff, the idea for the film. Latvian farming system. We could talk about anything.
Okay. That's...
But I mean, anyway, to go back to the film, I mean, I said it last night. Annecy didn't accept the film. Ottawa didn't accept the film.
But
sorry, it's done.
Who said Annecy didn't accept the film?
Or it didn't? Wasn't submitted?
No, we couldn't. We couldn't show it.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, it wasn't shown in Annecy or Ottawa.
Oh, what would it change? What would it change? I mean, if it was shown in Annecy or Ottawa.
Just my point is that, you know. Two of the major animation festivals didn't screen the film, but it's still done quite well.
Yeah, I mean, so. I'm not complaining. But the thing is that it's not about, like... I guess it is, like, my plea to you is... it's not that... that, you know, that I needed Ottawa or I need Animation Festival.
It's just on the personal level.
It's on
between us.
Personal level where I'm surprised. In some ways, I feel that by rejecting the film, meaning that, but not even seeing it, like even now I'm kind of surprised that you haven't seen it yet, that you are kind of rejecting me personally because it's a very personal film and it is a person, like, everything is inside out in that film, and that film makes me feel very vulnerable when I show it, and then I show it to people, I feel frightened. Like yesterday at Cinematique, I felt frightened, and I'm always nervous about showing the film because, not like I made the film as a conversation with a friend, and it was like an abstract friend, but I made the film for a friend, and when I put it out in front of 1,000 people, not everybody is a friend, and not everybody is sitting there thinking friendly thoughts. And so you feel vulnerable and exposed. And so I'm just saying it's kind of surprising that you have a hard time to relate to the film or to take it in. Even if you don't like the film the way it's made, there's still a lot of person inside, and obviously you don't like the person inside. Or I don't know how to read it, you know, because as I said,
yeah, I can't see it that way.
Okay.
I don't know.
How do you see?
I mean, I'm just looking at it as a work that I don't know. Maybe there's some issue that I have to go and deal with a psychiatrist, or why can't I get past 20 minutes of this film? To me, it just felt, I felt like violent. I felt there was just, it was this machine gun of narration that I couldn't process. And again, maybe that's like being with somebody in their manic state. All at the same kind of level, the cadence, and it was just too much. And just from an animation perspective, I just started to think, it just feels like you're not trusting your images, that you're overcompensating with the dialogue and the sound, and letting, instead of letting the visuals just breathe and speak.
Okay.
But I don't think it's a personal. I think we've been talking for 15 minutes, so.
Okay.
You know, if it was the same.
Mm.
And we spoke last night, so.
Mm.
I don't think it's the same. But, yeah, I don't know. It's been a tough year because we didn't take Theo's film this year, and I got attacked by another sort of somebody I'd consider a friend as well because their film wasn't successful. Apparently, it was my fault they weren't successful on all the animation festivals. So it was just one of those years. And
I mean, I don't really. It's not that I don't. As I said, you know, I don't. Doesn't really matter to me if it's accepted or not, but it's just I'm surprised on a personal level. So that's all. So I'm still puzzled. I still don't understand quite, but, you know. It's all right.
Okay, now should we go rewind and talk about the roots of the film?
But it's just kind of, it's interesting that you haven't seen the film and you are insistent me to talk about it.
Because there's people that are listening to this and would like to know more about the film.
Okay. All right.
That would be, you know, why as well. It's not just you and I here.
Okay.
There's at least 6 people downloading this.
Oh, yeah?
Maybe.
So you know for sure?
Maybe
you know
6,
the name and addresses?
Yeah, you can find them.
Do you know what their dog eats?
What their what? Their dog eats?
Yeah, do you know what their dog eats?
What their dog eats?
It's all right.
Is that a Latvian expression?
Yes. All right, so you want to know why I made the film?
Yeah.
Okay, just like plain why, what urged...
I mean, I would guess because of your own experiences being depressed, you needed to deal with this personally, and it's also a subject matter that doesn't really get dealt with, especially in animation.
Well, I don't make films in lieu of... therapy, you know, that interests me. I actually don't like much films that do that kind of thing because there are plenty of those out there where people had a traumatic experience in the past and to get over it, they make a film about it and I guess they feel better about it afterwards. And it's fine, right? But it's like, as a viewer, I also want to be engaged and entertained and I want to be transported in something like a different reality. And so for me, the main thing why I wanted to make the film and why I actually make films in general is I want to shake people up a little bit, you know. I wouldn't say provoke. Provoke is a strong word, but shake people up and make them think independently from the mainstream kind of way of thinking. And so, like, offering my point of view on things, like, for example, sex and deadbeat of sex, which is a different point of view then the mainstream is pushing over us. But I also offer a point of view, a very clear point of view, in Rocks in My Pockets. And that is a point of view that is different from mainstream point of view. So that, for me...
How is it different from mainstream?
Well, you watch the film, then you would know. So that is what urges me to make films in general. That is the purpose of my life, actually, and because I don't see any other purpose.
You don't see any other purpose in your life?
For my own life, I mean, yes, that's the main purpose.
That's kind of sad.
Okay, well, however you look at it, it's very nice for me. It works for me. It pulls me out of bed in the morning.
But you're not working on a film right now.
I am promoting the film. It's important.
Sorry.
If it was not important, I wouldn't be here. I would be working on a new film. But I believe in this film. I believe that it's a necessary film. And I believe that I have to be with the film, connect the film with the audiences. And I believe in it. And I made the film, and making the film is only 1/3 of the job, and 2/3 is bringing out to people. Because if people don't know about the film, they don't see it. So if you make a film and you throw it out there and then you move on to the next thing, you didn't do your job, and that's how I see it.
Is it harder to get a feature film out there than the short films? or easier?
In some levels it's easier and on some levels it's harder. It's easier because there are not so many animated feature films independently made, you know, and it's harder because there are many more feature films. I mean, there are a lot of feature films and there's fewer slots for feature films, you know. And I don't know. I mean, and the stakes are higher. It's a more glamorous position to be a feature filmmaker, you know. The people want to interview you. The people want to talk to you. They want. There's also people come to your film. It's a whole evening is filled as your film. And it leaves an impact larger than just a short film and a bunch of shorts. So there is this, there's that, you know. And so there's more attention, which is easy. It's just like a kind of flattering, but at some point it gets hard because it's just like all I do all day long, you know. I wake up, I write emails, I go to sleep, you know, just emails, connecting with people and telling them about the film and all that.
So it's touched, you know, if it didn't touch me, you've obviously touched. I mean, I shouldn't say it didn't touch me because clearly it had some kind of fucking reaction or impact on me.
Maybe one explanation is that the voiceover is a female voice that is just like nagging at you and you're just having some kind of traumatic experiences,
like
of
flashback,
female voice nagging at you. I don't know.
Some unnamed female from my past that I spent 20
years with.
There's a
Latvian accent. There's a Latvian accent. It's just trying to tell a story.
Have you noticed, I was curious, have you noticed that women have responded more positively to the film? Or
Because the film is done by a woman, and because the film is about five women in my family, and because women are always more open about their emotional state of matters, the film, on the surface, is connecting really well with women, much better than with men. But to your surprise, a shockingly large amount of men deeply connects with the film as well, but they're just less, you know, outspoken about it. And also the marketing, you know, when you say,
how do you know they're deeply connected if they're not as outspoken about it?
Because they write privately.
Okay.
But you know,
are you getting more of a response to this than you would have to any of your short films?
Yes, because it has more outreach
beyond the animation.
It is
world.
It is because it has a more publicity. It's in a higher place where more people see it. In an animation world, or even in a film festival world, you know, it's just kind of stays in festivals. But this film, because it got really good reviews in really major, you know, publications, people like read over paper and then they see, oh, this film is about depression. And they're not interested in animation. They're not interested in film, but they are interested in the subject. And they say, I want to see this. And they come to that, you know. So that's...
Wow, that's a nice sound.
Sound effect, yes. Yeah. that was you farting, right?
Yeah, I have a very strange...
Well, anyway...
I have unique anal, oral sounds.
Yes. But you asked why I made a film, this particular film. Well, the thing is, because, you know, in general, I told you what urges me, why I make films. And the whole purpose or meaning of my life is strung on that idea of that I want to be part of that environment that creates something that resists the mainstream, right? And so so I've made 15 short films or whatever, however you count how many films I made, like quite a lot of short films. And some ways I felt, okay, it's not like you nail down I know how to make a short film because you don't know. Each film has a different challenge. But I wanted a different challenge. I wanted the challenge that I never faced before. And making a feature film, that was that challenge. And it was like entering a dark room where you're told in a, you know, when you enter a dark house, right?
Right.
You're told that switches on across the hallway, make the right, and there is a stairs on the second floor, past the first bedroom, past the second bedroom, and at the end there is a little room, and then the switch is on the right, right? And the room is completely, everything, the house is completely dark. And you walk through that rooms, and you're trying to figure out the layout while you're in the darkness. And then finally, when you reach this, and you're afraid, you're constantly afraid because you're afraid, I wouldn't say the monsters, but you're afraid that you were knocked into the glass, or that there is something that you were not told, like a pit, you know, in the floor.
Or you open a door and it just...
Yeah, so you are kind of concerned because you can't see. And then finally, when you reach the switch and you turn the light, you look around and you're like, what was I afraid of, right? Everything is seen clearly. And that's the challenge of making a feature film, where you don't know what's going to happen and everything, and you're frightened. And at the end, you know, when you premiere in a big festival and you get good reviews, you turn around and you say, oh, what was I afraid of? But you were, because you didn't know how is it going to end up. And so I wanted that challenge. I wanted to enter the dark house. And I also wanted to have to see how audiences would connect. That is that larger storytelling. And the voiceover decision came very early, just in a way before I even started writing a script, because I knew I can only raise so much money because I'm so extremely poor. For me, when you say $100,000, it's like you buy a ticket to a moon, you know. It's like I don't have it. I make maybe, you know, from $5,000 to $16,000 a year, right? For me to put together a budget of $100,000 is like, it's really unrealistic or unreal. It's unreal. And so I came up with the number 100,000 because it seemed unreal, but it seemed more real than 500,000, you know?
Right.
So I said, okay, for 100,000, and I would have to make it quick because, you know, rent comes into the budget and all that. And the way how, you know, you make things quick is like you have a voiceover. Like, you know, kind of like I kind of thought if I make the voiceover, then I would be able to tell the story and still do my crazy images. Like, you know, a lot of crazy images where people would stay with the story because the story would be that calming effect. Like, there would be that narration that leads, that guides the audience by hand. And you can do anything you want on top and the audience will still stay with you. And that was my thinking, and I started to work on the script under that angle. And then we worked on a voiceover with the theater director for 7 weeks, 5 hours every day, because I'm not an actor, and it had to be, because I have an accent also, so it had to be very clear. Like, it had to be so the audience understands every word. Or at least every other word. So the theater director also raised the stakes in the voiceover. Like usually in the film, the voiceovers go like, and she walked to the window, she opened the window. Oh, it's cold, she thought. And she closed the window and started to cry, right? And theater director, he insisted that there would be stakes. Why is it important? Why is it important to you? And why is it important for audience? So I would say, she walked into the room. She opened the window. Oh, it's cold, she thought. And she started to cry. And that became kind of the raising stakes thing, which is not usually done in film, but it's done in theater. So in some ways, this thing was crossover. The voiceover is a crossover between the film, the performance, and the theater, you know, it's in animation in some ways. It's actually, there is another layer of theater presence because the same theater director, his name is Sturgis Warner, he did the lighting for the sets because I don't know lighting and he has the experience with theatrical lighting and sets, and so he was really expert at that. So yeah, it was like incorporation of several kind of genres, I would say, whatever.
Now, when I had told you in my curt email that my reason for not liking it or at whatever it was at the time, you'd said you had heard that from some other people, and I'd wondered along the way, were there people who said, no, there's too much, it's too much, the narration is too much, cut it? Did you ever get feedback? Do you listen to feedback or just?
Of course, we did that. Before we recorded voiceover, we had a reading of the script to 30 people. They're mostly friends and friends of friends, so it was kind of biased audience. But it's also you also see the friends, you know, staring, getting restless. But we also asked for a feedback, and we cut a lot of scenes. We cut out because, you know, you want to make the best you could. And then we recorded the film, the voiceover, and then. Once I finished animation, we had two additional test screenings, just a line test, just to see how it works. And there was screening at Bill Plimpton's studio, and Bill was one of the people who said he was not so... Early on, he said, you're doing a mistake by having the voiceover, because you're not an actress, you should hire somebody who is an actor. And you know, he was one of the first people who said the voiceover is... It may be your pitfall. And I don't disagree. I mean, I don't disagree, but this is how...
Oh, I disagree with you getting an actress. I like your voice.
But I don't disagree with the statement that the voice is a problem. I agree, actually. But the thing is, I wanted to make the film I wanted to make, and I wanted to see what I can do with how it started. So it was a seed. You know, it's like when you have a, you know, acorn, you plant it in, you can't expect it to grow a sunflower. It's a seed. And you trim it, you know, but you will never make a sunflower out of oak seed. So it was just how it was, and I was pretty committed. And I am like a pit bull, you know, like if I grab a leg, I wouldn't let it go. And if I have a startup project, I wouldn't let it go. For me to reorganize everything, at certain stage, right? So you wouldn't know how film works until you put it all together. So you say, okay, they criticize the voiceover. I see the point. But you don't know if it works till you have all the elements.
Right.
And for me, I wanted to see how this acorn would grow. I wanted to see. I was curious. And maybe selfishly so. But so so we had, after the line
test... Art is selfish anyway, so...
We put together line test, right, the first draft. And we put it in front of... Bill had he gave his studio to have a test screening, and we had a feedback session, and there were like 10 people, again, most of the friends, and two people said, you know, voiceover is a problem, and there were five people who absolutely loved it, and they said, don't ever dream touching it. And I was like, okay, so this is a polarizing feedback. I don't know what to do with it. I have to do another one. So I had another one in a coffee shop, in a big screening room, in a coffee shop in Brooklyn. We invited 70 people. There were now
70?
Yes. There were mixed audiences of, you know, people who were friends, but they were complete strangers that I just like took off net. Like, you know, and invited people who whatever I wanted, how they were related to film one way or the other, to the film industry, but they were total strangers. And now we had the screening, and I thought, okay, I would know now if voiceover is a problem. And it was just the same divided audience. It's like, you know, 50 people absolutely loved the voiceover, and five people absolutely hated it, and the other ones said I could go this way or that way. And I was like, what do I do with this feedback? So I said, okay.
Throw it in the garbage and move on and just stick with what you feel.
But then I wanted to know if the story worked, right? So did you understand this, the questions we asked? Did you get that? Were you bothered by this? So we, again, this feedback... I was like, I wrote it all down, and it was brewing within me for 6 months, because we had Kickstarter coming. I was very busy. We were finishing the film, we were coloring it, and then once we finished the first coloring and the first draft, you know, I said, okay, the people in general said that they were not sure who is the main character till the minute 40, let me cut out the first 5 minutes, which I did, and I added the opening sequence of the girl rolling the rock up, where you know exactly who is the main character, and you don't have to wonder about it. And 5 minutes, like in the beginning, I had like longer expansion about how I would not commit suicide. And I thought it was like a funny footage, but it didn't propel the story forward. And then we cut out the sequence after Linda. There was a sequence as a renter, her after story, what happened with the renter afterwards. And I was like, oh, it's really painful for me to cut it, but I let it go. And so the film in the beginning, in the first draft, was 93 minutes, and we put it down to 88 minutes. And then I said, okay, it needs breathing room, it needs pauses. But again, you are going to make the pauses at the expense of the length of the film. And that was a hard choice. And at that point, I made pauses, but and then I said, okay, we have to commit now, right? But it's a hard thing to commit to when you don't know. And so I committed to the pauses in a certain places, and now I see they were not long enough. But the film is done. You know, you at one point you say, okay, it's carved in stone now because right. It's DCP, it's this and this, and you move on forward. And yes, I learned a lot about making a feature film, and there are things that I would not do in my next one, or I try to do something else in my next one. But this film is what it is, and I see the goodness and badness of this. One thing that it's good about the film, that it's not mainstream. And one good thing about the film, that it's polarizing. And the people don't walk out of the film feeling lukewarm. You know, they have passionate reactions to
right.
it. And what do I want them to walk out and say, oh, it was fine, right? They come to me and they said, I would love the film if not for your voiceover. Or they say, I loved it, the film, the whole the way it is. Or I hated it, you know. Yeah, but it's just not, it's not like, you know, oh, you know, I guess it was okay. That's not the reaction. And most of my work is polarizing like that, you know, like whatever I put out there, it's like, probably by now I should have been used for it. But it's hard. It's like every film you make, you hope that everybody in the world will love it.
With your short films, do you... Did you screen those in advance to audiences as well? I just find that curious that there's this need, and I know it's probably coming from Bill's influence a bit.
No, I know.
Because he likes to do these test screenings, and I've heard will change stuff based on audience reactions, which I find kind of
No, but the thing is, I want to communicate my idea.
Right.
I want to communicate the best I could. And yes, when audiences, like, you know, what 5 people said, I hate your voiceover, and 50 said, I love it, right? To me, it's like, okay, I go with the plan, right? But the question was, who is the main character, let's say? And they were, and the feedback was like, we were not sure for 40 minutes. We were like, it was interesting, but we were not sure. And then only in 40 minutes, we're like, oh, I guess this is what's happening. So I said, okay, this is easy to fix. And I don't want them to be wondering about things. I mean, I did an experimental film, but I still want the audiences to stay with the film. I still want to communicate my point of view, which is already cutting edge, right, or different from mainstream. I don't want them to be irritated by the storytelling skill, you know, if I can improve it, you know. Do you know what? Does it make sense? But short film, Tidbit of Sex, was too short for me to test screen. Like, yeah, but like, I test screened Birth, but that was, but I test screened also Dentist.
It just seems to me once you get into like 50, 60, 70 people, it's what's
yeah, but I test screened Dentist for like 3 people, and it was pretty useless because I didn't know how to do the test screens correctly. The Birth also the same thing. With the Rocks in My Pockets, Sturgis, the theater director, he had a technique. There's a technique, famous technique, named by this theater person, where there is this... where the creator controls the feedback session,
right?
Where you don't let people just ramble away about what they think about this and what they dislike or like. There's a controlled Q&A with the audience. And so I forget there are like tests, like there are steps how you ask these questions.
Controlled in the sense of keeping them focused.
Yes.
On, not and, manipulating.
Keeping them focused, and also that audience members are not allowed to talk to each other. Let's say one person says, I hated the voiceover. The other says to that person, crossover, saying, oh, but I loved it. The audience all have to speak to me, the director. And so that would be no infighting with the audience. Also that negative feedback would be rendered in a constructive way.
These responses are given to you orally or?
Orally, I write them down. I was sitting there, I have a lot of notes. And then I go home and I read them. And then I read them again a month later and I say, because in the beginning, I'm very slow. Like my brain is not fast. It takes things to process. In a month later, I say, oh, this note now makes sense. And then the other one, I'm like, I don't know what this person even meant with that. Although in the moment, it felt like a best thing ever that I heard, right? So it just takes time to process all that.
I just wonder if the... with an audience, if it would be better to do the same thing, to have them write down rather than an immediate reaction. Because people might be more honest when they're writing.
Yeah, a lot of people, like
more
I said...
More courageous in their responses.
Yeah, but they are courageous. I mean, people are not afraid to be critical, especially if the critique is in a form of being constructive, you know. They really are open-minded, like... Oh, okay, open about what I feel, but the writing.
But you're looking for a response that's right in the moment. They're not being given any chance to go home and process.
Yeah, but
what
that's
they
not
saw.
You. The response of the audience is always immediate. I want to have the immediate response rather than pondered response, like visceral response. But the thing is, like when you write it down, right? First, like you have 70 people in the room, right? You cannot make them, and not all of them are good at writing their thoughts. And so a lot of time when you ask them to write, like I've been asked to write in a feedback sessions, I don't write. I take the paper and I'm like, it was okay. Or like, I liked it. Or like, just draw a picture and like walk away because I'm too lazy to write. But when there's a conversation and you're part of the conversation and other people... ideas or feedback incite you, you're like thinking, and then you all of a sudden start thinking, I agree with that or I don't, and there is a conversation, and so that is helpful. I mean, you know, anyway, we're talking too long.
Why are we talking too long? We have about 3 or 4 minutes still.
Okay, all right.
So now that you've gone through you've this kind of haunted house, so this dark house.
But
turn the light on.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have a feature bug now that we're only going to make features or?
No, I like short films. I like short films. I like making them. I think that they are brilliant. To me, the short films is just like how you say it. It's like you. You can experiment with thoughts. You can experiment with subjects. You can experiment with techniques. And you can be... there's no responsibility or weight, at least the way I make shorts. I mean, I know that a lot of people feel differently, like if you make a short for $1 million. But I make shorts fast and easy. And I just try something out and see if it sticks. And it doesn't stick, you move on. This feature is like... It's a more consumed and more... there's more responsibility. I have like team of investors and team of donors and team of backers and you know, you don't want to disappoint them, and it's, you know, it's just like a different way. But also making a feature film takes a bigger load of ego, you know, like you are the center of that teamwork, you know, you know your idea is taking this ship, this huge ship with the sailors across the ocean towards an unknown continent that may exist or may not. And you, if you don't have that
ego, is that the plot for Fitzcarraldo? No.
Yeah, something like that. Or Columbus.
The ship over the mountain.
Yeah, ship over the mountain. But you have to have that. You have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in your project. And you have to carry the conviction to bring the other people on board. Yeah. And that takes more ego than a short takes. You know, short is like I'm sitting there alone, scratching my nose, and just doing it. And people don't like it. Well, that's too bad. Let me try something else, you know. But as a feature, it's just like, it's an ego. And then the attention that you get is like really stroking your ego. And you're like, ooh, I should come down to earth at some point, you know, because this is not real. Right. So anyway.
How have the reactions been? Just curious about audiences, like North American audiences, reactions to like Latvia. It's showing there, or even the other night in Ottawa, it showed in front of a lot of Latvian people in Ottawa.
Yeah,
has there been a different reaction?
Yeah, well, the Latvians are a very interesting audience because they walk away from the film and they think that they are the only ones who could possibly understand the film. They come in and say, has anyone else can understand this film? Because this is uniquely Latvian. Like, only Latvian can understand it. And I'm like, well, there are universal themes in the film. And we showed the film in 50 film festivals around the world. And everybody connects. Every culture connects with the film because it's universal. The history is just the background of the characters, but the characters are recognizable in any culture. And so when I went to Germany or Israel or Latvia and United States all over the place to Canada. I didn't think that there were like different reactions to audiences, except yesterday in Montreal, people would not ask questions. I was struck by it that they would not ask questions. I couldn't understand why, but it's okay. But the only place where questions were different or reaction was different, that the place that asked that one question that was never asked anywhere before or after was in Egypt, in Cairo. At Cairo International Film Festival, where the film was shown, and right after the film, like 10 people asked the same question. And then I walked on the street, and people would just come to me, grab me by the sleeves, and ask that question. And then it's just like a constant barrage of that same question, repeated over and over. And the question was, how do you find meaning of life? And what is meaning of life? How did you find your meaning of life? And I was like, why in Egypt of all places? And then I put one and one together. And I thought, okay, the people who asked me the question were young people, young men and women. And they came out of age at 4 years ago of the revolution.
Right.
And for them, the meaning of life was to change this crooked old system. And they put all the meaning of their lives into it. And then after 4 years, 4 years later, now they're older and the whole circle went around and they are exactly where they were 4 years before the revolution. And then they say, the question is, how do I find the meaning of life in this changed, or what do you do about meaning of life when things work out like this?
And what do you tell them?
What can I say? What can I say from my comfortable place living in the first world country that's about to turn the third world country, you know, the biggest incoming inequality in the United States, growing and growing, and my rent is growing. But still, it's a country that claims a freedom of speech, at least, you know, if not of making an income. What do you say? And, you know, I can only speak for myself, what I found the meaning of life for me. And it's a work in progress, you know. And yes, it is a meaning of life for me is being part of this community, you know, being part of a larger community and serving other people. Like, yes, I know I'm trying to change the world with the means that I can, which is the films that I can make. And I know that it's like a small little drop, right? But I do believe that every human is like a pearl on a string, right? And if you don't do what you're meant to do, like what you were born to do, there would be, the other pearls are not going to fill up it's going to be an empty place in this beautiful string of pearls. So you have to do what you're supposed to do, that you have to fulfill your destiny, what you are, who you are. You have to take that space of being a pearl and being part of the string and seeing yourself as part of larger, of a larger scope, you know, saying, I am here, I am now, but there were people before me and people after me, and I'm part of that string of past and future, and I'm one of the conveyors of the message from the past to the future. So when you see your life in that scope, you say, okay, it's important that I live, and it's important that I get up in the morning and from the bed, because sometimes you don't, you know, you don't want to. And you say, if I don't do my work, if I don't sit down at the table and don't do my work, nobody else will do. Because if, like, nobody asked me to do this film, I decided, I wanted to make this film. And if I don't do it, it would not happen. And I don't know if it's a good thing, obviously, for you. You could live and without it, right? But it seems that for some people, it's important to have this film. And it was important for me to connect that thought of mine with those people who understand the film, you know? So.
Thank you.